Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Country Shock Entertainment Report. It's Talent Tuesday. Let's talk about talent. Some of us obviously have talents that are known to others, and there are some with hidden talent. For example, we talked on Sunday with Cousin Linda about her talent as a writer. There are people that are good at building, flipping houses, design, cooking. There are some people with hidden talents, so writing, singing. I'm not bad at singing. A few of my relatives know I can sing. Cousin Linda, I share the talent of writing, like Cousin Linda, and poetry. But some people, they keep their talents hidden. Some people do not realize how talented they are until people point it out. Like, I never looked at it that way, that I'm good at making things, or I'm good at computers, or building computers, or developing things like Cousin Linda, the GPS chat we talked about on Sunday. Did you know one of the creators have left his job at Google, and he was like the mastermind behind GPT chat? And I think his name is Jeff. Do you know his name? Jeff? Oh, it's not my tongue. One of the creators have resigned his position. I mean, I think it have gotten out of hand. He said now he sees it would take away jobs from people. You know, I guess they're monsters, in other words. We didn't realize it was going to get this far. But, you know, wow. But audience, Cousin Linda and I are here. So sorry for the delay. Cousin Linda, I did one of your things today. A friend invited me to lunch. You probably have eaten at this Mexican restaurant here in Jackson. Picantes on Fortification and State. So State Street, mm-hmm, and Fortification. You probably have eaten there before. Very delicious Mexican food. I've eaten there before back in 2017. But next time you come to Jackson, we must dine there.
Okay, so you had a good time and the food was good?
Yes, and I brought back my jumbo Texas margarita. So I'm sipping on my jumbo Texas margarita if I sound like I'm celebrating Cinco de Mayo a little early.
I wish I had some of that margarita.
Exactly. So Cousin Linda, you can have the floor and discuss talents and hot topics. So much is going on. One thing I must say, you asked me on text if we were discussing regular people or celebrities. Those celebrities know they showed up last night for the Met Gala event. artistic talent. Oh yes.
Yeah. Did you get the video that I posted?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I didn't get to see it.
I haven't. I know you probably posted a video that would just knock away all the footage I've seen.
Oh, well, I forgot all about it, and I went to YouTube and saw the YouTube of the fashions, and I made a few little comments about some of the people and what they were wearing. But, of course, you know, we didn't get to go inside the gala, which I would love to do to see what they do in.
Right. Who was the entertainment this year? Because I know before COVID, Madonna. I think Madonna might have been the last entertainment that they had before COVID. Who was the entertainment?
I have no idea. I just always want to see who's on the red carpet, and I wish Joan Rivers was alive. Did you ever watch Fashion Police?
I love Fashion Police. Her fashion reviews were always on point.
She could just knock me out the way she could describe people. And, you know, she loved to talk about folks, make fun of everybody. And
I wonder what she would have said about Lil Nas.
I didn't recognize 97% of the people. What did he wear? Was he in that
a feline?
Black?
He was a feline.
He was the cat.
Yes. I was a little fro on top. That was Lil Nas.
Oh, okay. Because I saw the picture on something. You know how you get? I get a lot of newspaper articles and stuff. And so some place that sends me articles had sent one of the articles was a picture pertaining to that, and I guess I didn't read it because I was like, who in the world is that? And so when I watched the video and saw it out there stretched, I'm saying, who on earth is that? I thought it was to be real. I didn't know he was that tall and slim.
I know. Every inch of his body was revealed. He really worked out, and he made sure he worked out for that night. He didn't eat anything.
And has a great body. And talking about talented, he
exactly.
is quite talented.
He definitely didn't drink or eat anything before that last night.
I don't think he could have. Looks like they poured that whatever it was on him. Because was it a suit?
Exactly. It looked like liquid paint. Like that. What's that fashion show where they paint the dresses and the bikinis on? The black bikini fashion show?
Oh, excuse me. I just woke up. I was watching TMZ and didn't know I had fallen asleep. I woke up about 4:05, and I said, oh, goodness, let me call into the show.
Oh, great, because I had told my friend, when I was invited, I said, well, the podcast definitely cannot be, the podcast is going on at 4:00, and we definitely are doing our best to stay committed to our time. And my cousin Linda co-hosts with me in Dallas. When I made it by 3:15, and I said, oh, my God, I'm so full. I hope I don't fall asleep and take a nap, and you wonder I am. So you fell asleep on TMZ.
Mm-hmm. And I love to see what they have to say because they cover everything and cover it so thoroughly.
Exactly. I love TMZ. So what was their take on the gala?
Like I said, I fell asleep on it. I can't.
So who is your favorite? Kim Kardashian to me was like one of the most elegant of what I've seen. And Gabrielle Union and D-Wade were like one of my favorite couples.
Well, I posted the video on YouTube, and I put on there because, you know, I'm not a KK fan. But she looked
I know. That's what I almost said. I know you're not a fan of them, but she looked very... Those pearls looked beautiful. I heard it took about 11 hours.
Oh, well, she was striking. She really looked good. And I tell you, somebody else I'm not a fan of who I thought looked good, and that's Paris Hilton.
Oh, okay. So I need to look at your video because I didn't see Paris. I seen Rihanna. I seen Serena and her husband. They look good.
Really?
But I need to see Paris. So how does she look? What does she have on?
A very simple black gown, and she looked fantastic, but I thought her posing was a little, over the top, because she kept twitching her head and shaking her head, and I was like, she got some kind of disease? Why is she twitching so? And I thought she was posing, but the posing was overdone, in my opinion.
Oh, she was doing the Paris.
And I was trying to figure out, and I love Janelle Monáe because she's quite talented. But I was
how did she come? Because she's usually very artistic. Prince loved her. She was one of his faves. So what did she?
Well, I can't explain. It's indescribable. This big old overcoat looking huge outfit. Karl Lagerfeld liked her a lot, I guess, because they used to dress in, you know, fashion, and she was slim, because, you know, he's made all kind of nasty comments about fat women. You know, if you wear a size 6, you're considered fat by Karl Lagerfeld. And today,
right.
I'm getting back
to my 6 and my 4. I said, and that was the time where I made sure I did not get over a 6. I said, I'm getting back to my 4s and my 6s. Definitely my 6.
You know,
the perfect 6 is love. But Karl Lagerfeld and Gloria Vanderbilt, look, Cousin Linda, Karl Lagerfeld and Gloria Vanderbilt, no, they were very outspoken about who their clothes were made for.
Yeah, now I can understand Mr. Blackwell, who used to talk about he wouldn't dress fat women because he hated Elizabeth Taylor and Zsa Zsa Gabor, and he refused to dress them. I don't know if they had a desire to wear Mr. Blackwell's fashions, but he used to just diss them. But I couldn't understand Karl Lagerfeld. I know you make so much money, and you don't really need the money of certain people that you're criticizing. But I didn't think it was right for him to make certain statements about people. True, clothes don't look good. And let's just be honest. Like, I think it was Betsy Johnson who said they choose models who wear a size 2 because the clothes look better. And they do.
Yeah,
you know, had to be what they call a mannequin. You've never had set models until here recently. When society has made people become all-inclusive on everything. I don't care if you
Not everybody can be a model. Not everybody can be a model. Because back in the day in the 80s when I was, you know, aspiring modeling and acting and being being a superstar, and when I, before I even started working for Fashion Fair, I used to go to the fashion shows and meet the models. Your twins who used to work at LeBaire Dallas and all, I would ask for advice about being a model. And you used to have to be your petite model, like you said, or 2 or 4. And if you wanted to be like a fashion fair model, you had to be, men had to be like 6'2", women had to be 5'10". And so I'm like, okay, I just had stuck to being a hair model for Tony. And being a makeup artist, you know. But now you're right; it's all inclusive. You see everybody modeling. Guys are now L'Oreal and Revlon spokesperson. There's a beautiful model with the vitiligo, like Michael Jackson. It's all inclusive. Some of these fashion designers would. Oh my God! If living, I wonder what they would say.
They probably would just go ahead and die because that was not what the fashion industry was about. I'm for inclusivity in certain instances, but in fashion, especially in haute couture, no, I don't want to see a, I mean, even when I was a size 12, a perfect 12, which is small right. by standards now, because I think 16
yes.
and 18.
I think the average American woman, the average American woman, I think, is a size 12 or 14.
Well, that was a long time ago. That was back in the 50s, because I remember Marilyn Monroe was a 12, because I made the statement to my mother, because I didn't know anything about sizes. I was, you know, a little girl and a teenager.
Right.
And Marilyn Monroe was the standard. She was a size 12. And I was teasing my mother. I said, well, don't you wish you were small as Marilyn Monroe? Don't you wish you were 12? And my mother said, well, I'll have you to know I'm a size 10. I was like, oh, excuse me. So it looked like I was
smaller
never,
than Miss Monroe.
Mm-hmm. I looked like I
but,
was never
voluptuous.
Huh?
I said voluptuous is what the, it's the word that they use for Marilyn
oh,
Monroe and the right.
Yeah. Yeah.
to
know,
be a BBW.
yeah, men like women who have some curves. But the fashion
right.
industry likes women who are skeletons, and because they like
right.
models who are 6 feet tall and wear a size 2. And I must tell
right.
you that those girls that are that tall and that skinny look fabulous coming down the runway or in print ads. But I think the model, Emmy, who claimed she was, I think, a 14 when she was protesting
uh-huh.
trying to get the fashion industry to include plus size models. Okay, that's fine if you confine it to plus size models. Don't stick them over
right.
there in the world of high fashion. But it just looks horrible
right.
to me, I'm sorry to say. So
I yes.
is good for some things, but yeah, you don't want change. At least I don't. I don't want change in everything. Now, perhaps if I were just now coming along, if I were just growing up, getting into the fashion industry, I might feel differently. But I remember in
right.
fourth grade when I got my first Vogue magazine passed on to me by Aunt Chris. And
yes.
I used to look at them little skinny ladies and think nothing about it. I was just looking at the fashions. And so when I got
yeah,
to
uh-huh.
the fifth grade, I announced to my mother I was going to be a fashion model. Of course, I didn't know about discrimination in the industry and all that. We had Naomi
exactly.
Sims when I was a little
like when
girl.
I was in the third
so,
grade, I was telling you all I was going to be president one day, and I didn't know it was a big deal to even
yeah.
say that. And now we have
yeah.
Kamala Harris as vice president. You're right. We don't know about prejudice. So what did Aunt Helen
yeah.
say? She probably said, yeah, do it. What did she say?
Oh, no, because I was, you know, I hadn't always been tall and skinny. I was a little thick and chunky back
uh-huh.
then. You
uh-huh.
know, compared to kids today, I was average. But I think back then I would have been what you considered a little thick. But my mama told me, she said, well, you can't be a model, darling, because you're too short and your hips are too wide. And I said, what? She said, yeah, your hips can't be over 34. And so
wow.
when I finally did, when I got to be in the 11th grade, and I was just 5'5 in the 11th grade, and was what I considered skinny, but I didn't know. I learned then that the fashion industry was full of racism and discrimination. When you started looking in the magazines, you know, you didn't see people that looked like us. And
right.
To see black models, you had to look in Ebony and Jet. You know, there were fashion models who did print ads in
right.
Black public.
Because I love me some Jane Kennedy. Oh, my God. She was like one of the first that I was
yeah,
exposed to as a model.
And Tamara Dobson was really cute, tall,
yes.
slim. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the fashion industry has just done a 180, just completely changed. But I was telling you, you know, you said you wanted to be that little perfect 6 or 8. Took me forever to get to be a size 6 because I stayed a size 7 for I don't know how long. Even when I was married, I was a size 7. And I kept wanting
uh-huh.
to fit into those 6, 8, 10s or whatever. And I was
wow.
Hall,
so you was an odd size. You was an odd size, a 7.
I
wow.
was what they call, yeah, those were junior sizes. And
right, 5,
for,
7, and 9. I remember 5, 7, and 9 stores. store. If you remember those stores were popular in the mall. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of those sizes before they opened that store were for young girls, teenagers, children.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, you know, I'm no longer a teenager. I want to wear fashions for women. But my body didn't develop into those kinds of sizes. I mean, I couldn't even wear a 4 or 6. It just would not fit me. I had to wear 5, 7s. And then when I got to be a 9, I thought I was really doing something. I said, well, if I can wear a 9, I'm so close to a 10 or an 8. But I was in my 30s before I could wear sizes like 6s and 8s and what have you.
Mm.
And, yeah, and because I remember when I was married and Glenn gave me 2 dresses for Christmas 1 year. And during the 70s,
yes.
Fashion was so horrible looking. And that was when they were making these little umpire style dresses with ties in the back. Like, you know, you used to have a 2 sashes on your dresses when we were coming
yes.
up. And you tied them in a big
yes.
bow in the back. Well, yeah, they brought that back, but only umpire style in the 70s. And the dresses looked like little girl dresses, but he had bought them at a store for women. That was just the fashion. And I said, I hate this. I can't
yeah,
wear this.
Yeah, so you remember, I used to love to wear those long dresses. So it was dresses like those that just tie in the back. So it was the adult version of those little dresses.
Mm-hmm. But these were mini dresses, and they just looked horrible.
Oh,
so
you know, I was about to mention that pictures that I look at of you, they show you in those mini dresses. In a skirt.
Mhm. Mhm. But
you didn't like them.
No.
You didn't like them.
These dresses were ugly. The ones that were little mini dresses, you know, with a handful of material, and they tied in
uh-huh.
the back. But it was, you know, like the umpire style, where it's no waist, but it's fitted under the breast line.
Yeah.
Those little, and they had little collars on them. And like I said, those big bows that you tie in the back, they were just ugly and horrible.
What did you tell him? Does he listen to us?
I told him I thought they were ugly.
If he's listening now.
Like little, and they were little girl dresses. Now, he knew I didn't like his style. He didn't know how to buy for me. Because he bought me a purse for Christmas 1 year, and I told him he could just take it right back to the store. He bought it at the Valley in Vicksburg. Remember that
uh-huh.
store, the Valley? A real,
I think
real
I remember the Valley.
Okay, Joanne Van Fleet, who used to draw the numbers for flowers, she used to do the weather on Saturday night.
Yes.
You don't remember okay. Well, yeah, she and
I remember that as a little girl. I'm glad you mentioned that. I do remember that.
Yeah, Joanne,
as a little girl.
Yeah, used to pull out the number for whatever to win
mm-hmm.
some money. But anyway, the weather was brought to what was sponsored by the Valley in Vicksburg.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, on par with Neiman Marcus. It was an upscale department store. I'll put it that way. It wasn't
yes.
up there with Neiman's.
But like Parisian, because Mom always talked about Parisian used to be in downtown Jackson. It was like Parisian.
Yeah, Parisian was more of a dress shop. The Valley was a department mm-hmm. store. I guess like a real
oh,
upscale.
Okay.
Because, you know, Macy's has, in my opinion, come down to JCPenney status. But it was a very...
You know what? I noticed that. Because Macy's used to be
yeah.
like Neiman Marcus.
Yeah, because when they opened the store here in Dallas, I was a part of opening that Macy's at the Galleria. And they used to
yes.
show you how exclusive they were. They had this very expensive jewelry, and Claude Montana was one of the designers that they carried, and you just did not find Claude Montana ever. But Macy's could not, Dallas could not support that Macy's store. And I don't know why. I guess it wasn't enough rich people who were buying stuff at stores like Macy's.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was. Because there were quite a few exclusive stores when I moved to Dallas, not me, Diane, and Beverly. Because I remember
right.
some of the boots, there was Lou Lattimore and Guy LaRoche and Sackowitz Boutique.
And Foley's is more like Belts and Dillard's, right? And I know Cousin Women,
yeah.
I used to love to get to Foley.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when Foley's bought out Singer Harris.
Mm.
Back on Glenn, who bought me that purse at the Valley, that was the ugliest thing. Mm-hmm. I told him, I said, take it back to the store. I said, well, that looks like something for somebody's grandmother.
Valley, it probably costs a pretty penny. It probably costs a pretty penny, too.
Yeah, yeah, because he knew I liked quality and I liked good stuff. But he just had no taste for me. Now, maybe he could shop for other women, but not for me. So I was like, if you insist on buying me clothes, let me be with you. Take me to the store because your taste is horrible.
So, speaking of talent shopping, he didn't have talent shopping for you.
Not at all. Not
some people
at
are talented
all.
At you know, wardrobe and styling. You know?
Because they had the personal buyers. I don't know if that's still a thing now, but at the upscale retail places, they had these personal buyers who knew what their customers wanted.
Right.
And they would just get clothes and send them out to the ladies' houses. Ladies, rich, rich, rich ladies did not even bother to come
right.
to the store. So, yeah, I guess there was a talent in being a personal buyer. I wouldn't want to shop mm-hmm. for anybody else, even if I thought I knew what you liked. I just wouldn't want that responsibility.
I've had that responsibility before, and it is amazing for people to have that much trust in
mm-hmm.
another person to pick out their clothes for them. Yeah, that mm-hmm. is a big responsibility. I have had that responsibility to get things together for people and have it all ready for them.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And then you just pray that they like it. Most of the time people like everything I chose for them. But yeah, it takes a lot of trust and confidence to do it for people.
There was this brain surgeon in Dallas, her name was Chinese, Dr. Ng, I think. And she and her father were surgeons at Presbyterian Hospital, because I used to read a lot of, you know, fashion articles about the local people. And I read somewhere in some article where Dr. Ng didn't go shopping. She had a personal shopper at Neiman Marcus, and she said, just send me 8 Chanel suits. You know, that's all I
right.
want. I don't care. Just send me, I need 8 Chanel suits. And I was saying, oh, it must be wonderful to be able to do that. Just call up somebody and send me 8 Chanel suits at one time. And I was
right.
thinking about the sales.
And
yeah,
look good.
And
know that they all look good on you. And yeah, because people would say, well, I have an event night. I have it ready for me. Have everything. Men and women have this suit. I'm going on vacation. Have outfits ready for me for different occasions. Like, oh my god.
When the designers had to do a fall collection, a spring and summer, fall and winter, and spring and summer, and in between that, there was resort. A lot of people don't know
right.
about the resort collections as well.
Right.
So, remember, you know, the late Alexander McQueen, who said he was just...
Oh, you're making chills go through my body.
Yeah. I love him. He was saying how he was under so much pressure.
And I love Willie Smith. Willie Smith was a resort collection designer, too. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, I remember Willie Smith. Yeah, I like
Willie Smith.
Him and Perry Ellis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget our homeboy, Patrick Kelly.
Most definitely. Patrick Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever visit his shop in or the museum where some of his clothes are when you visit Paris? I always wanted to meet him. And when I was a fashion student at Hines, I went to school with one of his cousins from Vicksburg, and he had told Patrick that I wanted to meet him and interview him. And Patrick had gave the word that he was looking forward to meet me, but, you know, he passed away before I ever got a chance to meet him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad. He died so young and unexpectedly,
right,
just when his label was really taking off.
Right.
The same thing
and
happened
right here,
with
Mississippi, a product of Jackson State. I said,
yeah,
right here from Mississippi, product of Jackson State.
Yeah, right, right.
Did you ever visit his shop or museum where his clothes are?
No, I didn't.
But he loved Paris. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I grew to love Paris because, you know, I didn't like it the first time I went in 1979.
Yeah. Oh. What you didn't like about it the first time?
Well, it was cold and rainy and it was sleeting and a little snow. Everything was gray. The food was horrible. The French people were very, very snooty.
Mm.
It was horrible. And it was so funny. Laverne and I, we went to London first, and we were talking about how horrible the food was.
We should be in London now. We should be heading to London now for a coronation.
Okay. Mhm. Yeah, but I mainly wanted to buy clothes and perfume in Paris. I wasn't interested in anything else. And I picked the month of April due to Frank Sinatra's song, April in Paris. And so we were in London, and we just could not wait. We didn't really enjoy London like we should have because we were so excited about going to Paris. And we were eating at some pizza restaurant, which it wasn't pizza. I don't know what you call it, but it wasn't pizza. But anyway, it was some thick dough with something on top of that thick dough that didn't taste like it was done. But we were talking about, we were so excited about going to Paris. And believe it or not, London was so inexpensive. Expensive, so affordable at the time. And this guy, I don't know if he was the owner of the restaurant or just a server or whatever, but he was telling Laverne and me that we should be shopping in London, he said, because people from all over Europe, he said the Dutch, the Finns, and people came from all over to shop in London because of the great prices and good quality merchandise. And so we were like, no, we want to shop in Paris. And so I did a lot of shopping in London, got some really nice stuff in London, and we went to Stratford-upon-Avon.
Paris is like the fashion capital of the world, right? Isn't Paris considered the fashion capital of the world? Yeah.
Yes, it is. And that's what we wanted to go there for, was fashion, and I wanted to get fashion and perfume. And so when we got to Paris, we didn't realize how expensive everything was going to be and how horrible the food was. And I never forget, Laverne and I were walking down the street, and it was sleeting something fierce. And we saw this couple, and I think they overheard us talking, and so they approached us. It was like being stranded on a desert island and you run into another
No.
And so, they came up to us and said, "Are you guys Americans?" And we said, "Yes." We were about to cry. And they were about to cry, and they were saying how they wanted to go home. They had been there about 5 days, and they were ready to go home. They wanted to go back to New York.
Oh, no.
And I think we had been there about 2 days, and we were crying. We wanted to go home. And they were talking about how they hated Paris, and we hated Paris. And, it was just so good to have somebody who could speak English, because the French refused to speak English. And I would speak some French that I remembered from the 9th and 10th grade, but I couldn't understand what they were saying back to me. So we just had a nice little hug and cry on the street, Americans. We're so glad to see some Americans. And I did manage to shop when I went to Paris because I had a bunch of credit cards. Thank goodness for American Express and No Limit. So
right.
I bought a lot of nice clothes and shoes and perfume. I remember going into a parfumerie or whatever they're called, and I just bought all kind of perfume, and I enjoyed that. And with our tour came what they call the bateau mouche, which is the boat rides on the Seine River, and it was freezing cold. It was freezing cold, and the boat was not, you weren't on the inside of it, you're on the outside, and we're sailing or, you know, going down the Seine on a boat, which I love to do now, but it was just horrible. My first experience with Paris was awful, and I said I never wanted to go back. And there was a young lady who worked with me in 1976 at the phone company, and she and her boyfriend were going backpacking through Europe, and they were going to be backpacking in Paris as well. And so I was telling about my horrible experiences. No, it was after 76, because we didn't go till 79, yeah. And when she got back, she said all she could see and hear when she was in Paris was me telling her how she was going to hang it, and she said, but it got
whining over the sound of knife of being shoes.
Yeah, people were saying, you know, oh, that's a one-time lifetime experience or something. And I was saying, yeah, because I sure don't want to go back. And I just went back on a phone.
So how did you decide the second trip? Because I remember used to go often to Paris. Every time I heard, Mom and I would hear you going to Paris, and you would send us postcards from Paris.
Yeah. I was working at AT&T Broadband, and two young ladies came over to my desk and said they had heard that I like to travel, and they wanted to travel. And so one young lady said, let's go somewhere where there's a lot of men. And I said, I have no idea where that is. Maybe if you go to the Bahamas or Jamaica, might be a lot of men there. And I said, I don't want to go to either place, because I had been to and the Bahamas, and I didn't want to go back. And she said, well, let's go somewhere around the
I love the Bahamas. I could live there because, Linda, I want a summer house. I want a winter house in the Bahamas.
No, it's too hot. Yeah. But anyway, I said, well, let's go to London and Paris. And time, like I said, I think it was 2002 when this girl, Cassandra, and I went to Paris and London.
Uh-huh.
And Paris had changed. It was, in fact, Europe had changed. It was colorful, and they had a lot more ethnic restaurants. Because when I was in Paris in 79, I think you could only get French food. I don't think there was – I didn't see any other restaurant. Everything was French. But with immigration, things had changed. And like I said, there was color. And I remember eating at Indian restaurants because I love Indian food. And it was just a lot better. And I said, ooh, I'd like to come back. And so Michael Payne and I were talking, and he wanted to go. And I said, yeah, because he had gone. He was dating a guy from Montreal, Canada. And they had gone to Paris. He had shown Michael all over Paris and everything. And so Michael had fallen in love with Paris, and I really liked it. And so
that's what I thought about. Didn't Michael love Paris too? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was like his pilgrimage. He had gone so many times, he was calling Paris home. He was like, Miss Linda, we going home this winter? Yes, we are. And I dressed with Clarence with us twice. So I just got to like it.
Like Texas, my second home. But what I've been studying about Turkey, and a big shout out to the number two link country. I think when we visit Turkey, oh my God, I'm gonna fall in love with Istanbul.
I used to think I would call UK home,
but and I've heard so much about how friendly the people are to Americans, and especially Americans of color.
Well, when I was at the event Saturday, the Fashion for Cancer, and Priscilla and I were sitting at the table with a couple, you could tell the guy was obviously a black man, but I couldn't tell what this woman was. And so we were introducing ourselves, and he said, and this is my wife, and I've forgotten the name. He said, and she's from India. And they have...
Oh, my God. I know you had a good conversation with them.
Yeah. Did, and they had just got back from Israel, and they were saying that they took a tour over to Turkey for a couple of days and how much they liked it. And I said, wow, and I've been wanting to go to Turkey for so many years. And they were saying how much you would love Turkey and how big Istanbul is, because they said it had like 5 or 6 different cities that were separate, but they were all in Istanbul. So you go to one part of town and it's own whole city, and the same thing, you know, all over.
Right.
They were saying how much they loved everything about Turkey, because I was and they said, well, if you go to Israel, you might as well go to Turkey, because it's only like a 2-hour plane ride from there. But now, back in the I think 90s, I had wanted to go to Turkey, but there was a lot of turmoil going on in Turkey, and that was when I was doing all that. Yeah, it was always something bad happening, and they were saying.
And I didn't realize it was so beautiful over there. I have friends from Turkey, but I'm like, they're here in the States for a reason. I didn't realize it was my friends that are from Turkey. They never told me how beautiful it is. And then my images have always been of the turmoil that I see in the media, on the news.
Because when I wanted to go in the 90s, they were saying that they would not recommend an American female traveling alone don't go to Turkey.
Right.
And I couldn't find any tours. So I just scratched Turkey off my list until I guess maybe 7 or 8 years ago, because I see a lot of videos on YouTube, and I said, well, I'm willing to take my chances. But, yeah, I guess if you stay on the beaten track in tours there, then it's probably better to take a tour. Because when they were saying that they were in Israel, and I was saying to myself, now, I want to go to Israel, but with all the terrorist bombings and stuff, and I had met a couple on a tour way, way back, and they were Jews. And they were telling me I should go to Israel, how much I like Israel. And I was talking about the terrorism, and they were saying, oh, you don't have to worry about that. You know, the security is so great. I don't care how great security is. You see, they have a lot of terrorist bombings and stuff in Israel. But I've never heard of the church groups having problems. And
exactly.
I
have some missionary friends that went to Turkey last year around this time, and they were so worried for their safety. But they were like, pray for Sister Bethany. But then what I'm researching and what I'm seeing, even from a South Bay post and from what my friend whose music I play, and from my research, it's safe. It said that even non-Muslims were safe to travel there. You know, so I'm like, wow, some people just are misinformed or have certain images in their mind.
Well, I think it's just by chance and the grace of God, because I remember when I was in Morocco and my mother was quite about me. I had no idea there was some kind of fighting going on, a civil war or something down in the Sahara Desert. So I called my mother. I think I called her from one of the countries that I was, because it was a Portugal, Spain, and Morocco tour. And I had called my mother because I was supposed to be coming back home on some certain date. But anyway, there was some kind of delay, and I had to call my job and let them know that I was going to be late coming back.
I think I remember that vacation where it was late in your trip coming back.
And I was talking to my mother, and she was so glad to hear from me. So she was saying, darling, are you okay? They having a war in Morocco in the Sahara Desert.
Right.
Like,
and I know my mama was right with the hollering, because I think I remember that. I was praying too.
I don't know what in the Sahara Desert. I don't know anything about any spot. What are you talking about? So
right,
yeah,
I think both
like,
of Mama were praying. Oh Lord, I think I remember
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Lord, please take care of my child. She's over there in this foreign country, and I don't know where I was going. One year, my mama was like, "Why don't you just get your butt somewhere and sit down? Can't you travel in the States?" I'm like, "I could, but I don't want to." But. I guess it's just a chance you take.
Well, I don't, Cousin Bev getting her passport, no, not future show talking of travel. We need to talk about passports. I've seen in the news recently that people that need to renew their passports and people like me that need to get a passport, I heard that we need to hurry up because there's like a delay or something going on. What do you know about that, Cousin Lynn?
Well, they're very backlogged. They didn't have enough employees, and COVID set them back because the U.S. had to work
like
remotely.
The IRS.
Yes, yes, very much like the IRS. I guess all government agencies were having that problem,
mm-hmm.
but they are really
yeah.
backlogged on passports, even the expedited passports, which I always do.
Mm-hmm.
And Cousin Duffy,
yes.
if you can. Get the portable is not the word. It's an additional, like, passport. It's the little laminated card, a little bit larger than your average business card. In case you lose
okay.
your passport, you have that little
okay.
backup. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which
so when I do get my passport,
one.
Be sure to get that backup one.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's just like a
okay.
laminated card.
Because
so
you're believing me, so you where because I can't find my passport. I know.
I tell you how travel has changed. You don't want to give your passport up to anybody under any circumstances.
Right.
But when I,
right.
when I was traveling back in the 70s and 80s, the weird thing is when you checked into your hotel, they kept your passport. At the hotel, they just kept it. You didn't keep it on you, and why? I don't know. Because like when I go to these foreign
Whoa.
Countries, I don't ask them questions about their customs. I'm at your mercy. Whatever y'all say we're supposed to do, I'm a foreigner.
Right.
I adhere to your rules. Okay. If
right.
you say you need. My passport, okay. I'm going to trust you to return it to me when I'm in your country. I'm not like, you
right.
know, certain groups of Americans. I'm an American citizen. I demand
and that's how they get locked up. You question our authority. Why did you come here?
That's the next thing I was going to say. You're going to be demanding your rights from a prison. And be begging somebody to try to get you home. No, I do not go over to another
That's
country.
That's why I said, Cousin Linda, you're not leaving me. So look, like you adhere to their instructions, I'm adhering to your instructions. When I order my passport, also for that laminated one, a little bigger than a business card. Because you're not leaving me anywhere. Like, I got my passport. I left it in the hotel.
In some countries, there you have to worry about pickpockets, and Italy was one of them. And especially watch out for children. Children will act like
wow.
they
Wow, I really would love to visit Italy also. Oh, my God. I have a Facebook friend who lives in Italy, and he posts 24/7 his daily life, and it's so beautiful.
Yeah, Italy was beautiful. Rome and Venice. I went to Rome, Milan, and Venice. Milan was a
uh-huh.
little industrial. I put that on my tour. Well, it wasn't a tour. It was individual travel. But I put that on the, as one of my mm-hmm. cities because it was the fashion capital mm-hmm. of Italy. But it was
yes.
very industrialized to me. And I didn't really get to enjoy Milan. But Rome was okay. But I fell in love with Venice.
Capital, but it's like industrial because it is the manufacturing side
I
of it, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. They have the old Domo, and I think you can go to the museum where they have the Last Supper, which I didn't do.
Oh.
Because American Airlines lost my luggage, and I didn't have clothes. I had two pairs of jeans.
Oh, no. Did you ever get your luggage back? Did you ever get your luggage?
Two weeks later when I got home, after I'd been at home, and somebody had busted into my luggage. I don't know who
it was.
They busted the locks. I guess they thought it was contraband in there or something. I don't know. But I didn't apply for compensation or anything like that. But, I had clothes enough for my entire trip. But in Italy, especially in Milan, you couldn't go in certain stores unless you were dressed appropriately.
Right.
And, Milan was just, I could have left that off the tour, I think.
And that's what I researched was studying for our trips to Turkey, that only when we go to mosques do we need to, you know, wrap up and cover up. Because I know the post that I see South Bay share, those women are wearing skimpy dresses and gowns, and they dress like Americans over there in Turkey and Istanbul. They dress like Americans.
Yeah.
But when we visit the mosque, of course we dress respectable and modest.
Exactly. And some countries are like Catholic countries. When you go into the basilicas, I guess, or the churches or whatever they call them, they want you to dress modestly. And I think that's only right.
For all religious houses of God, that's how we should be. Right.
And that's what I thought, because I was appalled at the way some people dress when they go to regular church here in the United States.
Yes.
And they said, well, it's what's in your heart. And I said, but you still should have some kind of respect.
Exactly.
Rather than going in, you know, with the shorts on, Daisy Dukes, and all this cleavage showing.
Clubbing attire.
Yeah. Right. I think people should be modest in the house of God. I may not agree with your religion, but I think that you should respect your religion, because I do. I don't follow your religion, but I certainly respect your religion.
Exactly. Wow. But this has been a great talk. The show is about to conclude. We didn't even, right before the show, I've seen a story that our late night shows will be affected by this writer's guild. And I love to watch Jimmy Kimmel. Look like I won't be watching the live Jimmy Kimmel, not tonight. None of us will be watching our favorite late night shows on CBS, NBC, ABC. They say they're the first casualties of the writer's strike.
Yeah, well, I always watch the news or Perry Mason or somebody.
Right.
So I watch a lot of old TV shows.
And we know TMZ not won't be, because Linda, we both love TMZ, so we know TMZ won't be affected because they will be covering everything.
Right. Well, we didn't get to talk talent and stuff today.
No, we sure didn't. So.
But
those artists at the Met Gala, they definitely were talented. But I guess in a way, we talked about the talents of the fashion industry.
Because
I'm sure you worked with people, and then you find out they have another talent, like cooking or sewing.
Yeah.
Like, wow, I didn't know you were that talented. I work with you every day, and look at the talent that you have.
Yeah, I'm amazed. I have two good friends who can really cook and really sew. And in my opinion, they don't take advantage of their talents, because I have a friend in Jackson who can make anything. You name it, and she can sew it. She can whip it out on the sewing machine. Mm-hmm. And she can cook anything. Uh-huh. And here I have a friend who can just close. Or whatever, and she's a good cook, but they just take that for granted. granted. And I was saying, I really wish I had some talent like that.
Right.
They can alter clothes. I don't ask them to alter anything for me. Well, certainly not my friend in Jackson, but my friend here in Dallas, because she was saying how she doesn't do that commercially. So when it looks like everything I order or buy in the store, it has to be altered. And I just go to the local and you know, have to pay to have somebody to alter my clothes and hope and pray that it comes out right. Because
and you're so right. The most talented are the ones that say, but I don't do it for the general public.
Yeah.
You know, I just do it for fun. Like, oh, my God.
Or they do it for themselves. Or if they need to whip up an outfit to go somewhere, they'll make something for themselves, but they don't do it for the public. And I'm wishing that they did, because I need that kind of service.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. To tailors and pay, and they don't do anything. It's my clothes, just like when I took them into the tailor shop to be altered. It's the same way when I bring them home, and they don't even iron your stuff anymore. I don't know what happened, but they will alter it, but they don't iron it. So I don't know if pressing extra, I don't know what's going on, but I know I've taken my clothes to a couple of different tailors, and the wrinkles that they had, because you know when you order clothes, they come in a box, and when you take them out the box, they're wrinkled. And so I said, it's got to be altered, and I'll just wait and let the tailor press it. They become, the wrinkles that I took in there altered, they come out with the wrinkles if they've altered my clothes. So.
And that used to be part of the service. That used to be the service. That used to be the service. I mean, they knew that's what we expected and that's what we would get.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, now, women, we've always had to pay the rations, but men didn't. They would alter men. So, you know, they hemmed the pants and they pressed the pants. But women, we had to pay for alterations.
And then we receive our items. Then when we receive our items back, like you said, they're ready to wear. Just put them on. They're ready. They're good.
Well, not anymore. So
you know, wrinkle-free, you know.
That outfit that I had on that I wore Saturday, I had taken it in to be altered because the dress was way too big. And when I brought it back home, it was pressed and it's still too big. I'm just at the mercy of trying to get stuff done. And if you take stuff back, they argue with you. They say, well, I did what you told me to do.
I did what you asked me to do. Well, why is not fitted? Why isn't it fitted then?
Well, you must have lost some weight or you must have gained some weight, some kind of excuse. And I've had cleaners to ruin my clothes and swear that's the way you brought it in. No, it was not like this when I brought it in here. But, you know, it's your word against their word. And so, and this was way back there. I didn't want
to
cause confusion.
I have to pay.
Yeah, still have to pay. But can you imagine trying to take something back now? You know, they might pull out a gun and shoot you.
Oh, that is
trigger happy now. You know, if you look at somebody the wrong way, they pull out a gun and shoot you.
Right. Let's see. I've heard some more stories like what you had mentioned about the ball rolling in the neighbor's yard and about the baby crying the other night, the guy that's still looking for it. I think I heard another story about a Frisbee in California, ended up in a neighbor's yard, and somebody ended up dead because a Frisbee ended up in the yard. I'm like, oh, my God, why? People are snapping for no reason at all.
I posted on Facebook, people feel like now I got a gun and I'm going to use it. Even though the incident doesn't require a weapon, I got my gun and I'm just going to start shooting.
But the show concluded. The show concluded, but they they're letting you and I talk. The show just concluded, so it'll be ready soon. They're letting you and I talk a few minutes. Okay, and what were you saying? And the quick temper and what?
Oh, I was just saying that people don't have any rhyme or reason as to why they are killing people, other than the fact that they got a gun and some bullets and they just feel like killing somebody. I don't know how we got that way in this country that you feel like you've got to kill somebody. I can understand arguments and disagreements, but why do you think you have to kill somebody?
Exactly. And Cousin Linda, I found out the person I went to lunch with was a former cop that used to work out neighborhood. And anybody that I told you, but the recruit committed suicide, girl. The recruit that died yesterday at the training academy. Even my friend, the former officer, he said he even thought it was too much, heat exhaustion or something. And that's what I thought. He just dropped dead. He said another officer called him to invite him somewhere and told him the officer committed suicide.
Wonder why.
The recruit, I mean, not even the officer yet.
Yeah,
but he was a fire department. I wonder why too.
Why did the recruit? Because I saw
sound like he did it in front of. Not like he had it in front of everybody, in front of a lot of people too. Just from the way they describe it, that's why I thought he might have had overexerted himself, but he committed suicide.
Wow. Well, they were talking.
We won't hear that because I've been waiting on the news to hear and for his name to be released, but. When it comes to suicide, they don't tell us that the death is suicide on the news, you know. So we'll never hear it on the news that it's a suicide.
They were talking about that on Morning Joe. I think it was this morning when they were saying that many young people are committing suicide because of social media. And it could take in any number of reasons. Regarding social media, people don't know how to act around other people. Social media makes them depressed. And I can't relate to that. I guess since I've had human contact all my life, we're the type of species that we need contact with each other. Can't just become a herd and be normal. But now with social media, people spend all their time on their phones or on a computer or something interacting.
And in Zoom meetings. And on Zoom meetings.
Yeah, they brought that up.
Because my friend asked me to lunch. I had to make sure I didn't have any Zoom meetings scheduled. You're right, but we need human contact.
Exactly. And I was saying I have so few friends in Dallas, and I'm thankful for that because when I first retired from AAA, I didn't have anybody other than my friend Phoebe, and thank goodness she was out on medical leave. She had been in a car wreck, and she and I spent a lot of time going to lunch and dinner and breakfast and stuff. But when she went back to work 9 months later, my only contact was Walgreens, Walmart, and Jenny Craig. And, you know, at Walmart and Walgreens, I had to go shopping. I had to buy something. And at Jenny Craig, same thing. I had to buy food. But at least I had a counselor that I used to talk to when I was at Jenny Craig. And, you know, and I talked to the cashiers because you order your food and you pay the cashier. But that was like human contact. And I was like, I need to get my butt up and go back to work. And for financial reasons as well as I need to be around some people. Mm-hmm.
You need
human contact. I was just saying you need that contact with other people. And a lot of these folks have family members, but nobody in the family seems to communicate with each other because everybody's doing their own thing on their
Exactly. Look at our family. Exactly. Thank God I have you. And Uncle Herman that I talk to every once in a while, and I mentioned he stopped by about a few weeks ago, Beverly, and said, and I had just missed him. But, yeah, and I need to call in Aunt Midras or go leave a happy bag on her door.
Yeah.
And I thought I seen Cousin Doris pass by Sunday, and I met her on Facebook. I was like, didn't I see you pass by? I'm like, you know, I tried to wave at her if that was her. Like, stop. Don't just pass by. You know what I was thinking? I'd love to see you and talk with you.
Yeah, people just don't do that. And you don't visit anymore either.
Pass by. We used to love to visit one another. Visit. Don't just pass by. Stop.
Remember when you could go by people's homes unexpectedly? You better not.
Right. I love to just buy your mama house all the time. I was in the neighborhood, I had.
Yeah, somebody knocked on my door this evening, this afternoon, rather, and I looked out, you know, in the peephole, and I was like, I don't know who that is. So I looked on my computer. There was no messages from the leasing office. Because if they're going to come back for whatever reason, like inspections or something, the fire department or code violation people, they will send you an email and let you know. Because we were to have had the fire inspection people. They come in and check the sprinklers. And so that got canceled. And they say, we will update you at a later date. And so, because you can't refuse, you know, you have to give them entry. So I'm looking.
What about your maintenance people? Do they just up and come by sometimes?
No, not unexpectedly. You have to request maintenance. And if you put in a maintenance request, it's usually online. Nobody wants to talk on the phone anymore. So when you do a maintenance request, it's online. And they'll, you know, type in there, thank you for your maintenance request. We will contact you in a few minutes. They never do. But, you know, somebody's maintenance is supposed to be coming. So if somebody knocks on the door, I still say, who is it? And they'll say maintenance. But I'm not expecting anything.
And you know, I say, who is it? You better have a special knot, and you better holler your name, because I am not opening the door for anybody.
Me?
We don't have chain locks.
Remember when you used to have a little chain lock on the door? Yeah, we don't have chain locks anymore. For some reason, they don't put them on doors.
I'm not popular anymore. Look, don't give me any ideas, Cousin Linda. I will do my best to find those chain locks. They sure were helpful.
They were. They really were. I wonder why they went out of style. I don't know. And I didn't recognize, and it was a man, you know, he looked to be about 6 feet tall.
What was his race?
He was black. So I was not, it didn't look like a UPS or a FedEx person. And like I said, I haven't ordered anything. And if I order something, y'all can leave it over in the lockers.
And if he was a neighbor, he didn't look like a neighbor. He should have said, this your neighbor, so on,
girl. I don't know these neighbors. I think I'm the only person that's been here since 2006. In apartment complexes, people can go, you don't get to know them. Like back in the day, way maybe 40 or 50 years ago, living in an apartment complex, you knew your neighbors. You don't know your neighbors,
right?
Because they here to come home tomorrow. I don't know them, and I don't
want to
know them.
But speaking of notifications, I know when me and BJ lived in Sherman, I know when they were sprayed, they would say, to, you know, let me know, because, you know, they didn't want it to affect BJ. They would say, well, we're going to spray such and such day, you know, either make arrangements or be off day, you know. Yeah.
I'm opening the door now. I cracked the door open to see if somebody left a package out there. There's no package in front of my apartment.
Okay. Did they leave anything? Do you see a note?
Nothing. Nothing.
How long ago was it?
It was
before the show or during the show?
It was before the show because, like I said, I was waiting for TMZ, and I went to sleep on it.
Oh.
So it must have been.
So you don't see anything?
You don't see
nothing.
Anything? He didn't slide anything under the door? Is nothing under the door he slid
no.
in?
Nothing
oh,
in the
okay.
door, nothing in
I don't blame you because I'm not opening the door for anybody. I don't know who you
and
are.
And I used to say who I used to
even,
say.
I even tell Beverly. I even tell Beverly children. Say even when Beverly was here, I'm not gonna up and just open the door. You have to say who you are. They don't like that. But I'm not gonna open the door and you be a criminal or a killer. You know?
Right. Exactly.
I'm not gonna just open the time I open the door. Be the time I should have not opened the door. I asked, who is it?
Exactly.
And especially here by myself, I'm not. And I'm a nosy neighbor. I talk to everybody. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot. Mm-hmm. You don't be knowing these strange people. And then even people you know, you can't give the benefit of them to.
You can't.
And that's what's sad. Even people you know, you can't give a benefit of doubt.
Right. Well, cousin, it's almost 5:30. I'm going to get over here and watch the news and then eat some dinner and try to, what's Tuesday night? The Family Business. I think that's what I watch on Tuesday nights. And after that, I'll probably get to bed and go to sleep. Well, okay.
Now, I go to bed early like you, too. Tuesday night's like comedy night on ABC. And then I think Will Trent finale is tonight. So you watch ABC News, don't you? It's time for Lessa Hope on NBC, my TV on NBC. So I like ABC News, too. Recently I've been watching a little bit of Lester, but I like to watch David Murr. Let's get that news.
Yeah, muted.
Look, we need to talk about healthy living and etiquette in the near future. Tomorrow is World Wednesday. Are you working tomorrow?
No, I don't have an assignment yet, and I don't expect one to come up. So I should be available tomorrow because I don't have an assignment at this time.
Okay.
So
okay, I scheduled for 5 a.m., but if you want me to switch it to 4, I'll switch it to 4 p.m. But I have it for in the morning. World Wednesday.
Do what's convenient. If I wake up at 5, I'll call in. But if I don't wake up, because I'm not going to set my alarm. I used to. But it's like when I would set my alarm, it would be like, oh, yeah, there's no show schedule. I'm like, happy damn. I don't woke up for nothing.
Because I'm doing my best to stay consistent, you know, so we can do our topics and also keep the listening audience. You know, involved, because that's what they want to us to be consistent. But it's World Wins tomorrow, and you definitely have to talk on world. You're the one who traveled the world. But how we can make this world a better place. Look at the good side of the world. It was all coming together.
Okay. Well, I guess then do it tomorrow at 4, because even if I work tomorrow, I'll still be able to get here, you know, a little after 4. So, afternoon is better for me.
Okay, then. I'll change it from 5 to 4 tomorrow. And I just need to look at that coronation schedule. Because I hadn't scheduled Fridays yet, but I had seen Good Morning America said they were going to start their broadcast Friday morning. But it might be just their pre-show, because it's Friday. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, okay, then. I will plan it for tomorrow at 4.
Okay. Well, nice talking to you. And thank you so much. Looking forward to Black History, too.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye. Well, we'll talk the world tomorrow. Okay.
Okay,
I said do something a little different than Win and Wednesday. Talk about the World Wednesday.
Okay.
Okay. Well, it's 5:30 on the dot.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Enjoy your dinner.